Morning, it's
Welcome back to another episode of Smashy Business Show. Good morning. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of July. Good morning. I'm here. I'm Richard Fitzgerald. I'm here with
Waleed Shehabi. Good morning, Richard. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. And Waleed, what's your role? What do you do?
That's a wonderful question. Well, mainly I'm a co-founder of a property technology company called Keeper. But I've had many lives and many starts, as you may think, and I come from a finance background. So it's a bit of finance, bit of technology, and bit of real estate all jumbled up into one.
It's good to have you here every Wednesday with us. Today our headlines are RTA grants $117 million contract for Dubai Harbour to Sheikh Zayed Road bridge construction. There's an agreement signed in Egypt with European firms. It's a $33 billion green ammonia projects deal. And a third contract and construction story we have today is Trump. Real estate company have partnered with Dar Al-Arkan. I'll get that right.
Dar Al-Arkan,
that
one. Yeah, one of the major developers coming out of Saudi Arabia. They've had a lot of projects actually in Dubai, so they've spread their wings around the region a little bit.
Interesting. That's the luxury tower in Jeddah. Yeah, maybe we'll start with that one. You know how I know Dar Al-Arkan, and different to you, I actually put some investment in their Sukuk. Because it has high return,
correct.
Their corporate
yes.
bond.
Yes.
But tell me a little bit more about their actual
So this
business.
Is a listed company, actually, out of Saudi Arabia. One of the older developers in Saudi Arabia. Maybe developers in Saudi Arabia are considered a little bit differently than how you're used to, like the MRs of the world and the Damacs of the world and so on. In the case of Dar Al-Arkan, the majority of their developments were sort of like master communities where they develop the infrastructure but then sell the plots of land to smaller developers and private developers. And so on, and that's how, over the years, it was built. But more recently, it's gotten into the full cycle of development, which means end products, developing full master communities with end products, with apartments, with hotels, with multi-use facilities, and we saw them. Push on that front in Dubai quite
semi-state, or if they own the land and sold the plots, were they, even though they were listed, are they semi-state government entities?
So there's, I don't believe there's a direct state involvement in the cap table of.
But now they're becoming a kind of a main developer.
But they historically sort of bought big plots of land and then developed the infrastructure for them. So that a lot of people do that, and private companies do that in Saudi Arabia. And it tends to be in Saudi that actually plots are quite active, and plots trading is the main sort of. If you want speculative and investment sort of behavior
plots,
in Saudi Arabia,
maybe
rather
that'll
than
be on an app sometime.
actually, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of very interesting prop tech happening in Saudi Arabia, and some of it is about data and identifying data and pricing of plots of land for development. I've actually sampled quite a few of those startups. Very, very interesting.
On a top level, because last week we actually talked about the size of a construction opportunity in Saudi, and we talked about the development, the numbers, and there was trillions of dollars mentioned. But as a top level, how do people view the landscape there? Who are the big players? In layman's terms, we've heard of companies that aren't as prominent now as they were maybe decades ago, like the Saudi Ojeh Group, the Bin Laden Construction Group. But now you've got other players like Russian and now Dar Al-Arkan and others. Is it sort of finding its Are we still waiting to see who emerges the big players in construction?
Well, I think there's the construction question and then there's the developer question. And usually, sometimes they're one and the same, but most times the largest construction companies in Saudi Arabia, like the ones you mentioned and the Bin Laden Group and others these days as well, have taken on the major infrastructure projects of Saudi Arabia and of the broader region.
The giga projects maybe and the
absolutely.
Cities and the metros. And
the cities, the parts of the cities, the transportation infrastructure, the airports, the hospitals, you know, the public works contracts and the like. And a smaller part of their sort of revenue would be generated from the private sector investments in construction of buildings and communities and so on. Developers, on the other hand, I mean, we tend to think we know what developers do in general because we have so many of them in Dubai and they're so prominent and so active and there's a a lot of activity in acquiring sort of developer projects and paying them down over time. But not every market is developed to that degree. It required a lot of regulatory infrastructure. It opened up over time to foreign investors and then created the escrow accounts and then created the owners association management. Because when you build a building and sell the individual units, there's a lot of common area left. Right? You have who takes care of the elevator and paying the utility for the common areas, who takes care of the landscaping and so on. So you have to create a body represented by all the buyers and owners of these properties in order to manage and bill for those expenses. So it takes a lot of building infrastructure. The Dubai Land Department did it over decades, actually, until it got where it got to do and got to the transparency. Saudi Arabia doesn't have that infrastructure yet. In terms of the regulatory infrastructure for private developers, hasn't opened up entirely for foreign investors, hasn't created a relatively liquid secondary market for properties that are what we consider over here freehold. So all these are opportunities for the future. But the likes of Dar Al Arkan right now has transitioned from being like this land, massive land developer and end user sale of the land so that they develop on their own, into developing master communities all the way through to the final final product, in anticipation of all these laws and all these regulations actually becoming more accommodating for that. At the same time, you have by far the biggest player in that space right now, which is the PIF-owned Roshan. That currently is the largest developer in Saudi Arabia. And it's developing from a strategic roadmap, right? So it's both commercially driven, but also strategically in that the state and the kingdom itself has strategic objectives for the development of real estate. And the likes of Roshan is jumping on board without having capital limitations or profitability limitation in order to sort of prioritize these projects.
Yeah, fascinating. And because a lot of regulation in Saudi is done by the housing ministry as well. And as you said, you know, there's a lot of plots that haven't been developed. And now there's taxes on incentivizing, or if that's the right word, to encourage those to be built.
There's actually a tax on not utilizing the land, which I think is brilliant. This is absolutely what needs to be, because what ended up happening is investors, if you all you have to do is just hold the land, not put a penny into it for a period of time in order to speculate on it and make money, nobody will ever develop it, right? It's just it moves from one hand to the other without actually ever adding any value to its environment, to the city, etc.
The whole thing was incentivized on trading plots, not actually developing them.
Exactly. And I think this pushes now the conversation into the value add, into developing these plots, into creating additional utilizable property rather than raw property just purely for speculative purposes.
But in Riyadh particularly, there's a lot of construction going on, and in Jeddah, so it's definitely alive and active. It's just the regulation sort of coming with it.
I think it could be significantly more active, actually, if these regulations were all put into place and in effect. There's a high expectation of opening up the market completely to foreign investors and creating the liquidity around that. I think that would be a major step forward. And think about it. People who want to take exposure on the Saudi story anywhere in the world can now do it via the real estate sector.
Should we? So we started talking about Trump Tower being announced in Jeddah. And last week there was a $500 million announcement in Oman as well for Trump International Hotel Complex. There's obviously one here in Dubai. What do we make of all this? What do we make of a potential future and former American president's sons involved in property development projects across the region?
So I think there's an important distinction to be made over here. Is there's a difference when Trump is the developer, and then there's a difference compared to when Trump is the brand, right? And Trump is a brand, and maybe one of the most successful things that he's managed to do, obviously a very controversial brand, but still a brand. It's private developers utilizing that brand in order to add value for
instead
their projects.
Instead of saying go with Marriott or any hotel chain, they pick the Trump brand.
Exactly. It doesn't mean that there's actual significant investment from Trump into these projects. It's rather a borrowing of the name, the standards, whatever the brand represents, and so on. And that's an important distinction to make. It's not that the Trump
There's obviously an assessment of the project itself, whether it fits. You can't build a Four Seasons hotel if it's not at the Four Seasons standards, right? Yeah. And the Four Seasons is involved in the ideation stage and the original design stage of that project. But it doesn't mean that Four Seasons actually puts in the money to do that. It's similar. It's private investors who do so. It's private developers in the case of Jeddah, in Dar al Arkan, or private in Dubai, it was the Damac properties, for example.
Yeah. Sajani's. Yeah, exactly. So Dar al Arkan have obviously partnered with the Trump Group. They're doing Trump Tower in Jeddah. That's interesting, is it? Like, we haven't seen a Trump Tower in Dubai. We're not getting one in Riyadh. We're getting one in Jeddah. I imagine it will be residential, hotel, commercial offices.
I think they also might expect him to come back into the presidency, maybe. So it puts you in sort of a prime favor if you like. I don't know, but at the end of the day, it is a commercial decision based on what the perceived value of the brand is. In my opinion, it is a controversial brand.
Controversial because of Trump, or controversial because of that mixed line between politics and
both?
Yeah.
Both. There is a mixed line over there. There's no clear Chinese walls, if you might, historically. But also, it is because the brand itself is today is very binary. You either like it or you really, really dislike it. So that's to me, it carries a little bit of baggage for sure.
Absolutely fascinating. We watch the space, especially with the elections coming up. But I do tend to see tweets around Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and a lot of the Western coverage of Saudi giving him investment of up to $2 billion. So there's always going to be questions asked in this space. So as a developer who's, you know, coming into trying to be more consumer facing and commercial, it is a bit of a risky.
I believe it is, but it's I'm sure a calculated risk to some extent. The developer will see, probably based on their assessment, more value coming out of it than leaving because of it.
Okay. Enough with Saudi. Let's give some attention to. Let's jump to Egypt. There's what do you know anything about this? That European firm's ammonia projects, $33 billion. Investment.
Here's the thing about ammonia. It's based on natural gas production, and Egypt has a very strong sort of value add proposition when it comes to production of ammonia. And I think this is one of the sort of the large scale foreign investment opportunities that it has in its pocket. Basically, is utilization downstream of its gas. Its gas reserves for products like ammonia. That's as far as I know about it. I do not know the details of the investment.
Oh, that's good. So they do have some natural resources and energy sector that they're looking to cash in on.
It's one of the obvious areas where foreign investment is attracted into
green
into
ammonia.
Egypt,
so
for sure.
It's obviously in the. It must be in the sort of renewable sector, is it?
It's relatively clean, given that it's coming from grass rather than an oil extract. But I wouldn't know in detail how green ammonia is different than the conventional one.
Maybe it's a branding thing. We often hear of liquid nitrogen and what Qatar do, but there was also announcements that Saudi have found new gas reserves as well. So there's a lot happening in the gas sector that we might talk about a bit more in the future.
I think just the weight of the region keeps going up when it comes to energy reserves. We keep talking about moving away from that into renewable energy and into obviously other areas of the economy, but it doesn't hurt when you discover that you still have more and more as a percentage of the globe's total. It's a good under base for the economy. So
basically, it's Egypt's sovereign wealth fund. We never hear of it really, and they finalize agreements. There's a total of $33 billion. The largest is $11 billion from Frankfurt-based DAI Infrastructure. So they aim to boost renewable energy generation to 42% by 2035. And 58% by 2040. So it's obviously a play for Egypt in this area. It sounds quite positive on the energy sector. Looks good.
For anything that brings in foreign currency in Egypt right now, obviously is a priority of the government, of the economy in general. So
you probably want to see a little bit more headlines of that nature to stabilize the domestic currency and the economy.
Absolutely. And just the headline out of Saudi in this sector was that they awarded $25 billion contracts for gas expansion, and they announced different projects across the kingdom as well. So they want to increase Aramco actually gas production by over 60% by 2030. You can't sleep at the moment. There's just so many
things going on. There's something maybe not a lot of people know about gas production in Saudi Arabia. It's always been a huge gas producer. But most of the gas it produces what's called associated gas, right? It's because of the production of oil, you get gas coming up as a side product of that.
Is Sabich a gas?
So it's exactly that. Its source for all the products that Sabich produces is that associated gas coming out of Aramco, effectively. Some companies historically used to flare that gas, burn it, basically, zero value. Imagine Saudi Arabia invested in extracting that gas and creating its second largest listed company and one of its sort of real national champions in Sabic on the basis of extracting that gas and producing all those downstream products from the associated gas that they get from oil. It's how to extract more value from the same resource effectively, and I think this is a doubling down on that front.
Yeah, fascinating. My friend for a long time was CFO of a Kuwaiti gas company that just specialized in gas for hospital products, and they're huge. I forget their name, but imagine like there's so many points, is that there's so many different downstream elements to the sector.
Tons. The likes of Sabic, probably four or five products may make up the vast majority of their production. But you want to take it, you can go very, very specialized down that downstream product list.
Wow. Fascinating. Okay, jumping on to Dubai, the third country, the UAE, that we'll talk about today. Lots of contracts being announced. So the RTA grants $170 million contract for Dubai Harbour to construct the Sheikh Zayed Road Bridge. Waleed, what do you know about Dubai Harbour?
I think it's an announcement today in terms of transportation infrastructure in Dubai. And that's always been the story of Dubai. Like you think transportation infrastructure in the broader sense, and it's the roads, bridges, public transportation network, airport, port. You keep expanding on that, and that's really where a lot of the attention historically has always gone. Grow the city by growing its infrastructure first, connecting neighborhoods to each other, connecting different areas, unblocking traffic jams, making it easier to get from one point to the other. And there's a huge focus in the last couple of years and going well into 2030 on that transportation infrastructure. This is one example, and there's a parallel. You know, when the Blue Waters came out a few years ago and started getting populated, that got its own bridge from Sheikh Zayed also, and that alleviated a lot of pressure coming into that large neighborhood of Dubai Marina, JBR, and so on. And it also allowed for that part of Dubai, that sort of exclusive neighborhood, to actually significantly appreciate in value, because you weren't stuck getting there. It was easy access in, easy access out. There was no problems there. And I think something similar is being done there. Plus the fact that Harbour is actually going to be a key attraction. It is the cruise line terminal for Dubai, is primarily over there, as well as tourism infrastructure is starting to be built there, and it's becoming a neighborhood in its own right.
Yeah.
Today you do have a few bottlenecks as you try to get in there. I think planning for and kicking off this project will alleviate some of that pressure, and will remove some of the pressure actually on traffic going into Dubai Marina, which is both will benefit from.
Yeah, they've done a really good job at building Dubai Harbour over the years, and it's obviously, once you're there, it's beautiful. It's fascinating how it was built, but as you said, the accessibility can improve.
And I think that's what they're doing. And this, like, hot on the heels about the announcement of the new metro stations all around Dubai. If you see how the metro was built to date, it's been along the line of Sheikh Zayed Road mainly. It connects Sheikh Zayed Road, which is the spine of Dubai, effectively,
end to end, and then in the older areas in Deira and so on, it spreads out a little bit. It spreads out a little bit more. But Dubai's development hasn't been just purely on that line. It's actually gone inland significantly. And we just did a research report. We cover specific neighborhoods under Keeper. We try to get data on these neighborhoods and share them with our customers. And we discovered that JVC today is the single largest neighborhood in Dubai.
Wow.
And that happened quite quickly. And not only is it the largest, it's also one of the fastest growing. There's
larger than Deira, larger than Marina,
correct.
Larger than...
Yeah,
than
so Marina has 29,000 residential units ready and maybe like 1,000 coming in over the next year or so. JVC is now at 32,000 with 5,000 coming in from here till mid next year, over the next 12 months. And yet there is no metro there,
yeah,
right? And that is exactly what you want to see, is that these areas that are the new areas of Dubai becoming much more connected. Obviously, JVC is closer now to where the new airport's going to be, the Maktoub Airport, or it's already there, but I mean the new sort of hub for Dubai, which is moving to the Maktoum Airport. So you're going to see even more sort of weight and gravity attracted to that part of Dubai, which is not on the coast. And it makes perfect sense. There's already been a massive investment in a sort of car transportation, exit roads, entry roads, the main thoroughfares going in there, Hassa Street, Sukhaim Street. These are going to change entirely, and that'll open up a little bit of access. But the metro is critical for neighborhoods such as that, the inland neighborhoods, effectively, of Dubai.
Fascinating. I want to talk about RTA. So they've, as well as just mentioning a little bit more about the Dubai Harbour, the collaboration with Shamal Holding, who must be the developer of Dubai Harbour. They aim to create an exceptional seafront community, residential and leisure experiences. So this is... 1.5 kilometer bridge from Sheikh Zayed Road to Dubai Harbour. I think you perfectly described the analogy of the bridge that's for Ain Dubai and for Blue Waters. I think it'd probably be somewhere, something like that.
Very similar, I would
skip
suspect.
Over that sort of bottleneck,
correct.
Inner Marina Road. And the RTA are known within the government as being brilliant project managers. They actually end up doing projects that aren't just road and transport. Like they project managed Hatta development and many things like that. How does that come about, and is that unusual or?
I think it's one of the many things that makes Dubai unique, is that the public sector acts in the way that it does. Mm. It acts efficiently, it delivers on time, it delivers within budget, sure. And it is commercially minded. And RTA represents that very, very,
The subsidiaries, if that's the right word, the companies that spun out of the RTA that have gone public are all doing really well on the stock market. They're all up. Like the other ones have the, you know, six or eight projects that have gone live on DFM in particular. The taxi one, Parkin, they're all up. They're all doing great.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a monopoly value, obviously, in these services. When you have a concession over something, it tends to...
But E&D is down, right? So some other monopolistic sectors, that utilities, aren't performing as well since listing, yet the subsidiaries of the RTA, which is testament to what you said
and
how well they're run.
Absolutely. I mean, having a monopoly doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be run well as a business. Mm. And on the contrary, in a lot of cases, monopolies have a lot of waste and are inefficient and so on. The huge difference with RTA is that it's actually delivering an excellent product and delivering it within an efficient model. And I think, you know, it's one of the tools that Dubai has in its bank to deliver that that amazing value, is that it's built this great transportation sort of regulator that is actually also a project manager that delivers consistently, and that, you know, you tend to give it even more, you expand that responsibility a little bit more because they've been effectively delivering.
Yeah, fascinating. Well, great insights there. Fascinating about JVC. So what else do you see around the infrastructure? Where are the areas that you think are lacking and we need more of?
I think, you know, we're very, very well served by the metro.
In terms of the expansion, that will help a lot. That will alleviate the car traffic situation here. I think buses and bus routes, there's more to be done there. A little bit, there's an additional investment in that infrastructure, especially that they tend to share the same space as cars, right? And there are possibly better ways to do that. But that's, you know, a personal opinion. I'm no expert in transportation, city planning. But that that comes to mind. But I think a major one is going to be rail. And I think rail, which is an old, you know, which is, you're harping up to the old transportation infrastructure. It's actually old and new at the same time. It is needed. It will connect the UAE better with it, with itself through the Etihad Rail project. But I think the idea over there is expandable to the rest of the Gulf. Yeah. Right, and I think, and it's mainly about trade. It's not about personal transportation, human transport, just yet. But just opening up trade through the rail network across the GCC, I think, talked a lot about that. There are projects up and running right now on that front, but it would be great to see the Etihad Rail connect with a broader sort of Gulf rail system that focuses on effectively trade and logistics.
Absolutely, much, much needed. Any more trade across the Gulf and wider region is what, you know, it's what Europe was built on, like removing tariffs, cross-border trades.
It's looking at it as a block, looking at companies that are established anywhere in the Gulf being able to do business anywhere else in the Gulf, being able to trade freely with their, and effectively it'll just add value to everybody involved, right? If I invest in a company in Bahrain today and the only market I can access is Bahrain, that shrinks me, right? Well, if I establish in Bahrain and I can operate in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the UAE, then that makes my sort of target market that much bigger as a company, and that supports the creation of a much more sort of energetic economy, a lot of winners in that economy, and it just adds value in my in my view.
All this talk about flying cars in the future, yes, the fundamentals of proper infrastructure, roads, bridges, trains, are just
always
so crucial.
Is always critical, and you cannot skip over that.
It bodes well for the financial markets, and it bodes well for the capital requirements and the infrastructure needs and economy really for the region that these projects are continuing.
Absolutely, but something intelligent that could be implemented is, you know, from today, go big on electric car infrastructure, for example. That to me is an obvious one. That trend is not slowing down, and it's actually very good for your environment, very good for you know, what's accessible in terms of services. And we just saw it apparently just last month, the price of production of an electric car has dropped below an internal combustion engine car, like for like. So that trend is just going to absolutely continue. Yeah.
Brilliant. All right. Well, thanks, Waleed, for sharing your insights this morning. Really always fascinating to have you on and to listen to you.
Pleasure being here.
I challenged you with a few things there, but you came off trumps. So thanks a lot. I learned a lot. I know you're going to be traveling for a bit now, but we'll keep in touch. And next time you're available, love to have you back on.
Looking forward to it.
And we'll be back with another episode of Smashy Business Show tomorrow.